Our meeting today is specifically to hear a report of the disposition of the Mill Creek property. Invite any of the members from the House side who may be viewing these proceedings in their offices to please join us. We do have excuses today from Senator Winters, who I understand is back in Washington, D.C., and Senator Devlin, who is ill. It's my intention to go ahead and hear the report from the Department of Administrative Services and to not act on the report, either to accept it or approve a partnership with the City of Salem, the State of Oregon, today. However, we will have a meeting tomorrow. We are scheduled, so officially we'll go ahead and take action to move over the receipt of the report and on the Mill Creek property to tomorrow, Thursday, the 19th of June. With that, I'm going to go ahead in this subcommittee of the subcommittee and ask Lori Warner to come forward to present the report. Lori, if you would do that, I would really appreciate it. Well, let's see. Okay. looks like you may have all of the committee that's going to be here based upon, there may be one or two other members show up, but I'm not sure. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Lori Warner, the Facilities Division Administrator for the Department of Administrative Services. With me is Vicki Hardenwoods, who's the Community Development Director for the City of Salem. This is a report we were asked to make by the January 2003 Emergency Board regarding development of some 700 acres of property owned by Department of Corrections. The department is releasing the property to benefit the Cultural Trust and Oregon Cultural Corrections Enterprises as required by statute. The property is currently used for agricultural purposes. In January 2003, we reported that the highest and best use of the property is as industrial land, which is also consistent with the City of Salem's vision for the property. The city is looking for economic development and jobs for the community. The state is interested in the economic development, but also in maximizing the proceeds, estimated at some $25 million as industrial property. Since January, we've had a collaborative process with the City of Salem staff, Salem Economic Development Corporation staff, and ourselves to answer the four questions that the January 2003 e-board wanted addressed. So I'm going to spend a few minutes answering those questions briefly, and then we'll be able to answer any other questions you might have. First question was, what's the infrastructure needs of the property? The property has to be serviced by sewer, water, and roads. There's an existing sewer line that would allow for some development of about half of the property, but additional sewer infrastructure would have to be built at some point. There's also current water service, but a reservoir would be needed in the future to serve the entire property. And the road system interchanges at Kubler and Highway 22 are under study to determine what the extent of those upgrades would need to be. The second question was, what's the options for infrastructure financing? We would estimate that there's maybe $50 million in infrastructure needs. The preferred method is for the city to designate the property as an urban renewal district and then to use tax increment financing to pay for both the on- and off-site infrastructure improvements. The pre-development costs, the master planning, transportation impact analysis, archaeological survey, etc., are estimated at about $400,000. The City Council has approved funds to support part of those costs, and the State of Oregon, through the Governor's Office in the Strategic Reserve Fund, has identified $100,000 that will be put towards this effort to go with the city money to allow this phase to be funded. The third question was, what's the timeline for development? We expect that there's sort of three phases to this. The first one is pre-development, which is occurring now, May 2003 through May 2004. That's the planning process to ensure the property will have the zoning, the urban growth development, the master plan done, and the urban renewal district identified if the city chooses to go that direction. And these are all tasks that have to be done before the property can really be developed. Coinciding with that, at the same time, There's large industrial user distribution centers that are interested in the property and have contacted Salem Economic Development Corporation. The report basically from Leland, the consultant, indicates that the most likely scenario is that there will be an initial user, a distribution center type in property purchaser for the initial 200 to 250 acres. So that's likely to go on during this phase. We have responded to those inquiries that we've had thus far. The last phase would occur May 2004 and into the future, possibly over a 5 to 15 year period, where the remaining 250 to 300 acres would develop. That may be through some developer purchasing part of the property, or it may just be through the city process and the state process. The staffing needs of the state agencies was also a concern. We have looked at that issue and basically feel that the existing staff that the state agencies have are adequate. These aren't unusual or different processes than they normally go through in terms of working with cities for development. There's about 7 agencies involved. We have already had some work on these agencies' parts on this property, state lands on the wetlands, Department of Parks on the SHPO, the Historic Preservation, the agriculture on the endangered plant species. So folks are already aware that this property is one of the governor's 25 shovel-ready identified sites, and so we've had good cooperation there. The city and the state and SEDCOR staffs have worked through these strategies, and basically we're suggesting that this would move forward with the city and state working through a partnership on this property to ensure that it got developed as industrial property at this point. So we'd be open to any other questions you might have at this time.
Okay, Ms. Hardenwood, did you want to make any kind of a presentation at this time on behalf of the City of Salem Industrial?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I don't have a specific presentation. Lori has covered the specifics of what the proposal is. I'm here to answer questions, to affirm that the city is solidly in support of this option and willing and able to go forward.
Okay. Representative Patridge?
I'm sorry I missed the first part of the presentation. Luckily, I had a conversation with Department of Administrative Services earlier this morning, so I feel like I'm reasonably up to speed on the particular piece. What's the city's commitment and timeline that they've currently put in place to make some of the decisions as the timeline's been put in place, and where are we at on that timeline?
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, we do have a timeline outlined, and it's specifically the timeline that Ms. Warner just provided to you, which was to do the pre-development in the next year, get phase one underway the following year, and then look at phase two after that. So we have made a commitment to that, and we have some funding sources available to follow through with that.
Let me ask two questions in that regard, if I may. Relative first to the timeline and second to the funding sources. One, is the project dependent upon the city's ability to make the Milk site an urban renewal district?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'm not sure that we know the answer to that yet. We think that that is the best option available. Urban renewal is a tool that's available to the city that allows us to take future revenues and apply them to get infrastructure in place so that we can create developable land for the city. We have not done the finite analysis to take a look at what kind of revenues we need to generate from the property to make that work over time. And so that's one of the fundamental things we need to do over the course of the next year, is to do that analysis and then go through the adoption process for urban renewal. So we think it's the best option. We've informed our council we think it's the best option, but we don't have all the information yet to make a final decision.
No real council buy-in at this particular point.
The council has supported going forward with the analysis to determine whether or not it is the best action.
Relative to funding, Ms. Warner's indicated that the governor's strategic reserve could count up to $100,000. As I see that under number two, the options for funding that infrastructure, the city council then would need about $300,000. Is that what I understand?
We have committed, I think, around $276,000 in monies that we have available to do the pre-planning for this property, and the council has supported that.
Okay, so that's an estimated total. Representative Patridge?
But I guess my question is, what's your timeline? I mean, when's the state going to know whether the city is going to step up and do the urban renewal zone or not? Obviously, that's probably something you're going to take to your voters, unless your city council
I don't even know if you can pass it straight up now.
I don't remember what the statute says anymore on urban renewal boards as a result of what we did from the last round of property tax ballot measures.
It does not require voter approval. I would not anticipate that in this case, but of course it would be up to our council to determine how they want to proceed. I would expect that by next spring, maybe late next winter, to have the answer as to whether the urban renewal district is the best option and have that adopted. So I think the state would know that answer probably by December, January.
My concern as we walk away, city doesn't make decides not to make some commitment, and we have to make some other measure of how to develop this property or not to.
Representative, I think that that's yes, that's true. But the other side of that is, I think in order for that property to develop, there's got to be a plan to provide infrastructure there. And regardless of what happens, that issue is going to have to be dealt with. And I think that this is probably, from my opinion, the best choice to do with that, by partnering together with the city and the state. Otherwise, if that doesn't occur, the city will not do anything, and we will sit and wait until a proposal comes forward to us, which will delay the process longer yet. Whereas if we enter into this together now, you're going to have a much better opportunity of getting an answer earlier.
But my concern then, Ms. Hardwood, is that given the city of Salem's recent nearly $30 million commitment to the convention center, is really likely that the Mill Creek Urban Renewal District would go forward after that $30 million commitment.
Chair Butler, I think that those two are not very closely related. The conference center, which was just reaffirmed by the council the other night, and we're excited about developing in downtown, is in the downtown urban renewal district. Those monies are isolated and targeted for that district, and there's not a relationship between what's spent in that district as compared to other districts around the city. The process we'll be going through is determining how much, whether or not we should add another district, which impacts our ability to collect revenues. In this case, though, we're not collecting much in revenues off this property anyway, and it's in the city's interest to find a way to get infrastructure there to make that solid, developable property from which we can collect revenues. We need to do that analysis, but I don't think the conference center really has a relationship to whether that can happen.
But you believe the city would be disposed, city management at this point, and council would be disposed to potentially move forward with an urban renewal district to basically develop 700 acres of agricultural land?
We are committed to doing the analysis to that, and we believe that that's probably the best option in order to make that property develop.
Let me just ask then, relative a couple of figures under the infrastructure financing really hit me. And Lori, you had used a figure of $30 million. Or I think $25 or $30 million of value of a project, but the letter indicates your report of May 23rd indicates that the off-site infrastructure improvements, which may be as high as $50 million. The concern that I've got is that if we're working with 500 acres of developable farmland at $50 million for infrastructure needs, total infrastructure needs, that we're basically talking about $100,000 an acre of upfront costs. Are my figures correct?
Mr. Chair, I'll take a shot at this, and then Vicki can add in. The infrastructure cost of the sewer, water, those issues related to the property, the city has verified their cost estimate at about $14 million. Okay. The other bigger ticket item is the infrastructure, road infrastructure improvements, and those were estimated at some $35 million in the 1999 study that was done for this property on the interchange upgrades. That figure needs to be confirmed through studies that the city needs to do, and we need to engage ODOT, to Oregon Department of Transportation, and I'll put in your kitty at the end here, to engage as to whether or not and when those infrastructure pieces for the transportation pieces would be needed. The initial review here is that the first phase of this project could go forward, the first 200 acres, without upgrades to the the transportation infrastructure. So you would be looking at the water sewer capacity issues first, and then the transportation issues in terms of the roads. So I will, Vicki has something to add to that.
Mr. Chair, I think, too, there's the opportunity here. One of the things, in order to identify the needs for the infrastructure, particularly the state facility for transportation, is to know what the development on the property is going to be. So part of that, there's a relationship there of having to determine what the master plan is and then what is the need for the property. It's a big advantage for us as a city to be able to partner with the state, because there are a lot of state agencies that come into play in trying to develop this property. And one of the things we can do is to help the Department of Transportation identify what those needs might be and come up with a solution that might be the least cost but still handle the problem. And I'm hoping that the state gains the same advantage by partnering with the city, because while there are a lot of agencies involved from the state side, there's a lot of departments involved from the city side, and if we work together on that and can kind of smooth through the bureaucracy that happens when it comes to development, to identify some of those costs and minimize them, we're hopeful that we can get them down to the best level possible.
I guess then, going back to number one, relative to the infrastructure needs of the property and the upgrading of the road system and improved interchange at Kubler on Highway 22, Vicki, that's what, or Lori, that's what you're estimating to be about $35 million, but that's going to serve much more than the 500 acres developed here, won't it?
That's true. It provides other support for the city, and there was some estimate of that in the $35 million. I'm trying to think. I think that was like $13 million or something of it was sort of inner growth, city growth use, as opposed to the rest of it. And there was no delineation between how much would the property bear itself versus where, how would we allocate the other. So that piece of it, the biggest ticket item here is that transportation piece that needs to be sorted through with the city and with Oregon Department of Transportation.
You anticipate that that's going to be shared cost, that $35 million then?
That would be a question as to how that might be managed, whether the state through the STIP program for ODOT would have the ability to support any of that, and what the city choices might be in making those decisions.
I guess the concern that I have is that when you're talking about $14 million to develop, let's say, 200 acres up front without any road improvements, that's $70,000 an acre, and we're talking about an industrial site here, and I don't know how much you can run the price of this up for an industrial site before the state starts contributing money to have somebody buy this site. That's the concern that I have.
Mr. Chair, I understand the concern, and it's one of the reasons we want to do that financial analysis before we step into this, because we need to know that the revenues that can be generated from that property can withstand the cost of what those improvements are.
Will that be an RFP, Vicki? Is that what you're anticipating?
No. We are anticipating, we've been working with a contractor who has been working on this property for some time. They've done some work on it. We already have contracting agreements with them. It would be our hope to speed this up and be able to work with a contractor we already have under contract in order to do the master planning.
Help me. Between the two of you, you got a lot of gray matter here, brain power. Can you help me? The estimated current sales price per acre in place in situ right now versus the estimate after we put $50 million into this project?
Okay. Mr. Chair, the estimate from the prior study was that as ag land right now, that it would generate $2 to $3 million if it were sold. The estimate as industrial property is at $50,000 an acre, so $25 million. So that's the difference.
So we might be contributing $50 million to get $25
million? Mr. Chair, no. Our hope is that, and by using urban renewal, that contribution can come from the eventual purchasers and developers of the property. The idea is that we can borrow the money to do the infrastructure on the eventual development of the property to help pay for that. So how that gets pieced together, we have to work out. But we have this extra tool to help fund that.
Representative Patridge.
I guess my only concern is if you're going to bring in a large industrial
if you're going to bring in a large industrial piece into this particular piece of property, you're going to try and use an urban renewal district with the tax increment financing pieces that a lot of the ways we might bring some of those people in would include other incentives which are contained in state law, which may in fact not result in the net dollars that you're trying to get through your tax increment urban renewal kind of financing that you typically see in some of this urban renewal districts, is my understanding of how some of these work. But I'm sure you'll take those things into account.
Well,
the property tax valuations and some of those things, we've got things, and you know, we've got our various mechanisms to encourage development locally.
Yes, like
so
enterprise zones.
Some of those things may affect the property tax you receive off the property, which may not net you as much as you're trying to net to pay off the infrastructure costs. So I guess I'm concerned. I just expressed that. I'm sure you're taking some of those things into account when you look at the land. I guess I only have one other question. That is in regard to the land. I understand the city of Salem wants this piece of property to be industrial land because they're trying to preserve their downtown to some degree. Is that the highest and best use of the property for sale from the state's perspective on what they could net out of land if it was all developed as commercial as opposed to just industrial land? While the state needs to work hand in hand with its local jurisdiction, we also have financial obligations, I think, to try and get the highest and best use out of the properties.
Mr. Chair, the report done by Leland in the fall, Representative Patridge, indicated that the highest and best use was as industrial property because it was the largest piece of property on the I-5 corridor with freeway access and at the Kugler Interchange, and that it would be best as developed as industrial property. The other thing is that the city itself does control the zoning of that property. So you would probably have a hard time getting to commercial if they weren't willing to zone it in that direction.
Okay.
But can I clarify back to where you were representing?
You bet. It sounds like to me that you're going to make it up in volume, and I'm having trouble coming up.
The state isn't putting up $50 million for the infrastructure. It is really based on the model under the urban development model where you would use the tax increment financing. The city's currently realizing no taxes off this property or very little because it's in state ownership. Some of it's leased for agricultural purposes right now, but essentially going from zero to whatever that increment is that they increase it. And the analysis that was done for the study showed that it would support probably $80 million. The tax increment financing would be able to support $80 million in infrastructure improvements on the payback. So there is room there to cover this. And that is one of the big hurdles for this property is that key piece as to how to get the infrastructure there to make it work as anything other than ag land that it currently is.
Mm-hmm. The last question I had with regard to the infrastructure financing is that you'd indicated in the report, Lori, that other financing options, which may include general fund-backed resources, bonds of some sort, would those general fund bonds qualify for tax-free for the development of the real estate venture?
I'm not certain on the answer to that question. We could get back to you.
I need that. I need a response to that because when the state goes into real estate development and is out in the process of trying to develop new industrial lands for the governor's shovel-ready programs, I just question whether or not we can use general fund-backed bonds and go out and get the state of Oregon in the real estate business and say, folks, this is going to compete at a 3% rate in the marketplace for a state-run operation. So if you could
I think the city in terms of issuing general obligation bonds, we have the same constraints mm-hmm. and concerns about doing that.
I'm not concerned about the city. I'm concerned about the state at this particular point. If they want to fritter away their money, they can go ahead.
Okay.
Relative to then the timelines, under the phase one, the first user would most likely be a large warehouse or a distribution center. Under phase two, you talk about involving the brokerage community. Do you not anticipate involving the brokerage community under phase one?
Mr. Chair, at this point, we don't anticipate the broker community on phase one necessarily. The Salem Economic Development Corporation, SEDCOR, has been doing the promotion and marketing of this property, and they do that for this entire area. So this one large user, we don't anticipate needing to do that. There's a handful of companies that are looking for this kind of piece of property. But when you get to the rest of the acreage where there's more diversity and probably smaller parcels involved, we would anticipate that.
Okay. And that's under phase two, that those folks are going to be involved.
Yes. And we have met with those people and involved and had some discussions with those communities here in Salem.
And, Vicki, I don't know whether Lori shared my question list with you, but I had a question whether or not Salem could, in fact, raise the money for the infrastructure from bond sales based upon the creation of an urban renewal district. From your previous testimony, I anticipate that you feel like that's not a problem if the city council decides to move forward.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Let me qualify that a little bit. Depending on the potential revenues from the property, and so that's why the financial analysis, but our initial review of it says that it's a good bet.
Okay. Then if the large industrial user then is identified in the phase one portion of this, who finally negotiates the actual sale or disposition of the first 250 acres with that first user?
Mr. Chair, that basically would be a joint effort between the city and the state to do that.
Is there a formal arrangement to do that now?
There is not, Mr. Chair, and we've worked on a draft agreement between the city and the state through the AG's office. We have one.
You have a draft of it?
We have a draft.
Have you provided it to legislative council?
We have not done that yet.
Okay.
BAM,
does Linda Gilbert have a copy of it?
Not yet, no.
Okay. All right. Is there a possibility that you could share that with us?
Sure.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
Please. All right. We'll get that, Doug, then. And then relative to the project itself, I assume that the city of Salem and the state of Oregon has some employment goals related to this property. Can you share that with us? We're talking about 700 acres of the last prime I-5 interstate site. Can you tell us how many jobs the goal is to have produced off of this direct within the 700 acres?
Mr. Chair, that's a question I've really wrestled with, to tell you the truth, because the analysis on the property indicates that one of its highest and best use seemed to be for a distribution-type center. And those tend to be very low-density employee per acre kinds of activities, and we have not set a specific employment goal for the property yet, and I think that's because we want the flexibility to be able to use this property to the way that it can best be marketed and used, and some of those may be lower than what, as a professional planner, I might want to see there, and I think we need to have enough flexibility to do that. So we'll be discussing that as we go through the master plan for the property, but we have not set an employment goal as of yet.
I guess, again, if we're going to make it up on volume here and put $50 million into a site that's going to turn into $25 million worth of value, that the reason I serve in the legislature is to try and strengthen families and build family-wage jobs. If we're going to put $25 million of public funds, and I'm assuming the majority of that would be the city of Salem, we're going to put that kind of money of public funds into a facility of this nature. My hope is that you're going to create hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, of jobs on this 700 acres. Because only those kinds of that number of family wage jobs would justify sinking $25 million into a project, $25 million above and beyond what we've got into it already, to sell it for such a low price.
Mr. Chair, I agree with you. I think what we need here are family wage jobs, and we need as many of them as we can get there. And I would expect that there would be thousands of jobs on the property, even at the lower density of the distribution center. But I do want to be clear that the money that's being put into this, what we want to occur, is not to take public dollars so much as to take the increment that comes in as a result is use this as a financing tool rather than to take away dollars from the public that would be there ordinarily. Without the infrastructure, the property won't develop, there would be no revenue from the property. So we're trying to leverage it to make it work.
And I appreciate that, and I'm anxious about that. I just don't want for us to go in without the employment goals very clearly delineated up front. It's very difficult to go into a vast project with half-vast goals. Okay. Who then is taking the lead presently on the master planning?
Mr. Chair, we're doing that jointly. The state, the Salem Economic Development Corporation, and the city are working together on that. Shanda Shribbs, who is our urban development administrator and is here today, has been taking the lead from the city's perspective and has been sitting down and talking about putting together the contract for the master planning.
Okay. Lori, your report under number 4, talking about the staffing needs of the state agencies, indicates that the prioritization of this project is near the top for each of these agencies' workload, listing 6 agencies in addition to yourself, in addition to the Department of Administrative Services. So that means if we were to go to them, they would say this is a high priority, list amongst the top priority for our projects.
Mr. Chair, they should be doing that. This is one of the governor's 25 shovel-ready sites. Our experience to date when we've called these agencies and said we need help with this project is they have responded right away.
How many of those shovel-ready, 25 shovel-ready industrial sites are in southeastern Oregon? Can you tell me, Lori?
I don't know that.
Okay. Can you maybe provide us through...
Sure.
I realize that you're working with the governor's office on some other issues, but I'd like to know how many of those may rest in southeastern Oregon, where we regularly have turn-in reports of anywhere. I mean, if we can just get to below the double digits of unemployment, we're doing great. But we're regularly turning in some of my counties, 13%, 15%, and 18% unemployment, and that's totally unacceptable.
Yeah.
And so I would hope that at least 2 or 3 of those sites vest somewhere in those counties that have a double digit unemployment, because I'm sitting here looking at Salem, which enjoys a rate a third of that unemployment, and we've got a big shovel ready site that we want to dump $25 million of extra funds in above and beyond what the value of the site really is to the state at present. Okay. And then I had a question back over here that I jumped over the top of under number 1 relative to the infrastructure. You talk about a reservoir. Tell me about a reservoir for this particular site. The current water sources that are available out of the mountain reservoirs are not sufficient. You'd have another reservoir?
Mr. Chair, I apologize. That's really a public works question, and I'm not well versed in that, but the generic answer, and I can provide you with some more information, is that we have the amount of water that we need, but the height of the property, the topography of the property is such that we need to create
this
a reservoir.
This is the quantity, it's the location.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Thank you. When we start talking about building reservoirs in this very environmentally sensitive state in which we live and the economy over here, start talking about those kinds of things, that always is a concern to me. Okay. And then you will get me something. I have great angst over the issue of a partnership with the city of Salem, between the state of Oregon and the city of Salem. And we'll get a copy of your draft of your AG's agreement immediately following, if we could. Finally, I want to make absolutely certain that what the proposal here is, that basically until phase 2, this project will substantially exclude any other purchasers, any other potential users, other than maybe just your large warehouse or distribution site, that we're not going to involve the real estate community, that we're not going to involve any private development money in this, anticipating that the state will be able to do a better job than private industry. I need to know that that's clearly what we're doing here on phase 1 and up to the completion of phase 1.
Mr. Chair, that is the proposal at this point.
Okay. And so basically what we're saying, in light of the issues of the debacle with SAFE and the debacle within the other agencies that we've got, that the state is the best agency to go forward, can do it better than private industry.
Mr. Chair, let me clarify here. The state in this partnership is the property owner, the land bank holder.
Okay.
The partnership with the city is really the regulator and the developer, basically, at this point, where they're taking the property through the planning processes, the master planning, the infrastructure pieces, and that they're handling that through their staff and their expertise with Salem Economic Development Corporation.
But Lori, I want to make it clear that
that's the partnership.
That we're doing that without an RFP for outside private development or private any consultations with private industry. That basically this is a municipal project today and will continue to be a municipal project throughout the entire phase one. SEDCOR is going to find the tenant. The city and the state are going to work out the development agreement. The city and the state are going to come up with all of the resources. We're going to have the land, and we're going to put in as much as $276,000 from the local and $100,000 from the Governor's Strategic Reserve to start up just the initial studies. But then at some point, the partners will come together, and from their general funds, will seek as much as $50 million. And when we get to that particular point, we have not involved, other than the original study that's done by the outside firm, Leyland, we will have not involved any private industry.
Mr. Chair, well, a couple of things. First of all, we have involved three outside consultants, the Leyland, who are the real estate strategy people, OTEC, who's the engineering firm, and Norris Bates Simpson, if I get that right, who are the real estate brokerage community. The House bill that dealt with the cultural trust in this property directed DAS to get outside expertise working with us. We have expertise on staff, but to strengthen that we have these folks work with us to position this property in order to get the highest benefit to the state for what our goals are. So we would continue to have those folks involved with us and working on this project. The $50 million that you're talking about for the infrastructure is not anticipated as general fund dollars at this point from either the state or the city. It's based on the value of the property going up as development occurs there, and using, instead of that tax money going into the city's general fund, it would go to pay off the debt on the loans for the infrastructure. So that's the envisioned change, and then once that's paid off on the city's part, then that money would go to their general fund at that point.
I guess from a, and I'm coming strictly from a private industry sector. That's where my background is. It's how I've developed real estate myself. My concern is, and what you're talking about is taking a $2 to $3 million piece of property, and you're going to put $50 million into it of infrastructure and improvements, and then you're going to sell that property for something in the vicinity of $25 million, and we're going to make all of that up by having a higher tax base on the property. And you've got experts on staff, real estate and other development experts on staff, that tell you that this is the highest and best use and the best way to go about this entire project.
Yes.
Okay. Other than Leyland, you have the names of your real estate experts and other folks that bring us expertise, and you'll share those with us too.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yes, Ms. Harwood.
Mr. Representative, I just wanted to add too that we look at SEDCOR to help bring the private sector perspective in on this. They have 400 members. That they represent, private sector members. So we ask them, you know, they are representing that sector. It's not that we're excluding them entirely.
Okay, excellent. And they have all that expertise on their staffs and amongst those members.
Yes,
okay.
Absolutely.
Excellent. Thank you, Ms. Feldman. Then what we'll do is I would like to see some of that other information, Lori, and by ending this just a few minutes early, maybe you and I will have just an opportunity to visit about it immediately hereafter. It's not like we're going to have a quorum either. So.
No, you're not.
Thank you very much.
Doug, any questions that I've raised?
Mr. Chair, you've had a number of questions already asked. You're pretty across the board there. They raised the points about the $50 million is not general fund as we think of it here, the appropriations process. I don't have the experience in tax increment financing in this state, but I do have quite a bit in another state from a regulatory standpoint, and this is not that different than development in many parts of the country and how they go about it. I'm not sure about the numbers. My guess would be, and this may be something that the presenters want to check up on, is this way that large property tracts in Oregon are generally developed. My guess is in many cases it is. Again, I'm not sure how the numbers translate, $50 million for $2 to $3 million property values at this time, but that may be something that would they could check up on.
And that is a tremendous concern to me, because in these financial times, when I've got grandma on the ice floe with regard to our human services in the state of Oregon, and I'm coming to the city of Salem and to the state's general fund for bonding authority, not necessarily that the state general fund would be obligated to pay it, only in the event of a failure of the program, and I am greatly concerned over that. Because we're starting off 50% down when we start off. I mean, when we're all done here, we got $25 million worth of property and a $50 million obligation. Now, in business, that's what I call bankruptcy. But in municipal finance, that's what we call an opportunity, I guess. So my concern is that I just don't want this to turn into a debacle. And under this general government chair, I'm not going to turn loose of this easily until I know that this is really going to generate the jobs and strengthen families within this community the way that you're assuring me that it will. So, yes, Ms. Hartman.
Mr. Representative, if it helps at all, we do have a history here in Salem of working with the state in a very similar circumstance, the Fairview Industrial Park, and in that case, I think that the state receipts for that were, the state did not work hard, I don't think, to assure that a certain value came back to the state in the property. And in this case, we're working hard to see that both the state and the city benefit from the values that are here. But we do have a very successful track record of developing property under this kind of a scenario in the Fairview Industrial Park. And in fact, we're generating $1.5 million a year in tax revenues that we would not be getting otherwise as a result of the partnership.
And those have brought good jobs, and they've brought back the tax receipts without exposing unduly any of the good name and credit of the local municipalities, as I understand.
Exactly.
And that's the assurance that I think that we just have to have when this is all done, because I'm having a real difficult time with the numbers and just trying to make it up in quantity here. So and I appreciate the fact that there's some good public service done by generating jobs and placing a dollar value, but without knowing how many jobs that we're talking about, and without having that goal, it looks like to me that we're beginning a long, long journey, but we really don't know where we're going. And I need to know, and I need to have a better feel for where we're going, how we're going to bring families jobs in the local community, the caliber of those jobs in relationship to the jobs that may already be in the community. You've indicated that the highest and best use of this site is for industrial, but there's other property on the north side of the highway, which probably the highest and best use of that, and under present circumstances, is probably already developed, in some instances, to commercial use. So I'm not sure what we have here. Why one is distinguished from the other, and maybe this will benefit some of those other commercial properties or the development of other commercial properties on the other side. I don't know what you have in mind,
Mr. Representative. You know, the questions you're asking are the very ones that our council will ask as well. You know, so I hope we'll go through that and identify, get the right answers.
Well, your council are certified smart people, so I hope that they can get the correct and proper answers, and that all your problems will be little ones as you go through these processes. With that, we will go ahead and stand adjourned. We'll carry this report over till tomorrow to acknowledge the receipt of the report and take a look at your what it is that you're drafting relative to your partnership agreement. So officially, we'll go ahead and move the disposition of property or the report on disposition of the Mill Creek property with Doug Wilson from Legislative Fiscal Office and Lori Warner from the Department of Administrative Services over tomorrow. Ms. Hardenwood, thank you very much for your participation here today. We'll stand adjourned until evening hour tomorrow. Thank you.